Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein. This is Spy Talk.
My fellow Americans, it is undeniable that this past election was stolen. To all those members of the armed forces, join with us to defend our liberty and land.
What if the violent riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021 was not just an impulsive one-off uprising of a pro-Trump mob, but a learning lesson for a more disciplined and determined nationwide group of extremists? And what if, instead of holding the line when disputed Electoral College votes are being tabulated this coming January 6th, a rogue U.S. Army general claims leadership of the militants who show up with guns at state capitals and take hostages, plot to kidnap a government, and threaten a coup d'etat? That's the premise of an extraordinary war game that was staged and filmed in 2022 in a Washington, D.C. office space resembling a White House situation room. Produced in a riveting, suspenseful, and you-are-there style, the documentary portrays a bipartisan group of senior national security, military, police, and law enforcement experts handed an emergency to solve, an insurrection that threatens to go far beyond the U.S. Capitol riot of January 2021. Every time the officials seem to have a grip on the unfolding plot, the gleeful game organizers playing the role of insurrectionists toss another problem their way. The president, played by former Montana Governor Steve Bullock, is whipsawed by competing advice and sometimes seen frozen by the unfolding emergency. The chilling exercise, organized by the nonprofit Vet Voice Foundation, was inspired by a Washington Post op-ed by three retired generals who, in 2021, warned that the Pentagon should be aware that a sizable number of troops and officers share the extremist views and might be persuaded to join an insurrection. In short, they wrote, we are chilled to our bone at the thought of a coup succeeding next time. To discuss all that, my guest today is Janessa Goldbeck, CEO of the Vet Voice Foundation and a former U.S. Marine captain who was a key organizer of the game. Janessa Goldbeck, welcome to Spy Talk. I have to ask, did you all have a huge Trump derangement syndrome moment that drove you to create War Game? I mean, were you, or are you still in some kind of radical liberal fever dream? What's going on with this?
Well, I would say the impetus for this project was January 6th. You know, when we saw the insurrection unfold at the Capitol, I personally was deeply concerned, as were many of my colleagues, not just about the events of the day, but about the number of veterans and folks who had a military background who participated. You know, one in five of those charged in the January 6th insurrection were veterans, which is a vastly disproportionate number compared to our share of American society. So we were concerned about it. We are concerned about the rise of extremism domestically. And the impetus for the project, or the catalyst, was an op-ed that was written by three retired general officers that laid out their concerns that echoed ours and called on the government to take some steps to plan for what happens if you had another insurrection-like activity on American soil, but this time you had members of the active duty military or the National Guard participating. And we decided to take on that challenge ourselves.
So three highly regarded American generals, former generals, said that this is entirely possible. And you folks read that. You at Vote Vets, I guess, read that.
We're Vet Voice Foundation. We're a 501c3 nonpartisan organization.
Okay, so you and some other folks read this and said, let's put together this war game. Is that how it worked? Can you tell? I don't want to linger on the process here, but I'd like to know how this moved from reading an op-ed in the Washington Post and, you know, going out with the idea of creating a war game and then actually making a documentary. It costs a lot of money, time, effort, getting a lot of people together.
That's right. So we, you know, as I mentioned, we're a national nonprofit. We represent about 1.5 million veterans and military families across the country. I myself am a Marine Corps veteran. I served as a combat engineer officer. And a lot of the work that we do is focused on the federal government, working with members of Congress and folks in agencies to push policies forward that improve the lives of vets and military families. And so we had a lot of relationships already with people who had held, you know, very senior positions in government. And we started reaching out and asking, would you be willing to come in and do an exercise, an unscripted scenario, examining this issue and this potential problem? And we had immediate yeses from folks like General Wes Clark, Elizabeth Newman, who was a very senior member of the Trump administration, Senator Heidi Heitkamp, former senator from North Dakota, Steve Bullock, former governor of Montana. And when those folks of that caliber and with decades of expertise started committing and saying yes, that really allowed us to go out to sort of a wider net of officials from the last five presidential administrations, bipartisan, some staunchly nonpartisan, and invite them to come to the table. We knew we wanted to have some public accountability effort attached to the war game. We didn't just want to do the exercise, write a report, and then have that report get thrown in a drawer somewhere by Congress or the White House and never seen again. Mm-hmm. So we reached out to some folks we knew in the entertainment industry, actually, and asked, like, what are your thoughts on this? How could we make this accessible to the average American? And got connected with our incredible co-directors, Jesse Moss and Tony Gerber, who really brought this to life as a film.
I suppose, and it's a very gripping piece, I must say. I was totally riveted by it when I watched it the other night. But I have some questions. It's quite a leap from saying X number of people, more than one in 10 of those charged in the attacks out of service. It's quite a leap from there to say that there's a significant number of rank and file military service members who would actually engage in what amounts to, in your war game, is a coup d'etat, right? I mean, I was in the Army. You were in the Marines. You know, it strikes me that there was a missing piece here. To offer some criticism, the missing piece here is that we don't have any staff sergeants or orders going down to staff sergeants to say, put this down. So do you think that the career NCOs, the staff sergeants, and you know the military runs on the back of the sergeants, right? So the sergeants would go along with this?
Well, just to be clear, our scenario involves a very, very small percentage of the active duty National Guard actually following the instructions of the losing presidential candidate who calls on them to help him take power. A very, very small percentage, less than a tenth of a percent of the active duty forces, I believe, is what's in the scenario. Less than 7% of the National Guard in the scenario. And, you know, our claim has never been that the majority of the armed forces are, you know, riddled with extremists. I'm very proud of my service. I've worked with people of all stripes, politically and otherwise. And our oath was the same to the Constitution. And we all, you know, wore green and or deserts, depending on where we were. But at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't take. And I think the point that one of our Army veterans who plays Red Cell insurrectionist in the film makes towards the end of the film is, it doesn't take everybody. It takes just a few. And we know that a few have slipped into the ranks. We know that from the Pentagon. We know that mm-hmm. from the Department of Homeland Security, who have produced data on this and called on Congress to take action. We also know this from history. You know, we know that extremist groups have targeted veterans in the past at a disproportionate rate because, and active duty, guard and reserve, because veterans have a very esteemed role in our society. We're held up on a pedestal, and that makes our words and actions very influential in a way that other groups are not. And so they know that, and that's why they come after that population.
I think your main point there is that it doesn't take many to incite a crowd, as we saw on the last January 6th, but in terrorism movements in general. You know, it's not a mass movement. It's a small cadre that link to frustrations, larger frustrations, and mobilize a small number that can upset the apple cart. And that's very vivid in war game, that it only takes a few. Now, we've also seen, you know, attacks on voting systems adding credence to your scenario. We've also seen attacks on voting systems. We've seen violence flare up in from Arizona and many other places. I think the op-ed that you cited that the generals wrote cited Brigadier General Thomas Mancino, the commanding general of the Oklahoma National Guard, who refused an order from President Biden mandating that all National Guard members be vaccinated against the coronavirus. Post January 6th, which is now some years ago, where do you think the military is going? Do you think it's coping with a problem of extremism in its ranks, or it's just incapable of doing that?
Unfortunately not. I think that there are a couple of serious challenges to the military taking this seriously. The first major challenge is that it has become a completely partisan and polarizing topic to suggest that there are folks who serving in uniform who are ideologically aligned with extremist groups. There have been multiple congressional hearings on this subject where members of the Republican Party have said it's disrespectful to even, you know, claim that there are extremists in the ranks.
Sort of a version, a political version of don't ask, don't tell. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Or like I think about when the military really had its, you know, about 20 years ago, a real reckoning with sexual assault in the military. There was one of the first hurdles to get over was this pushback from the military itself and from members of Congress who were refusing to acknowledge that this problem existed. And the reality is that the military is a reflection of our society writ large. So any problem that exists in society is also going to be reflected in the active duty forces. And if you really care about an institution and you want to make it better, make it stronger, you have to be honest about the weaknesses and challenges that exist within it. And so that's what we're trying to do as veterans through this project is say, look, we are not, you know, denigrating the military. We're not saying that everyone who's in uniform is a, you know, member of the Oath Keepers or the Three Percenters. But for those that are, they need to be, that behavior needs to be addressed. And and we want Congress to actually take action.
Well, I want to ask you about that. War game is still in kind of a rollout phase. I think people are just hearing, a lot of people are just hearing about it. That's available for streaming and you're having, you know, screenings all over the country. So it's new. I was just talking to a fellow Spy Talk writer this morning, very well, very tuned in, and he hadn't heard of it. So, I mean, it's still a lot of proselytizing for you to do. I was wondering if however, you heard back from active duty military officers, people at the Pentagon, What kind of reaction are you getting from those folks?
Yeah, we've actually...
Do they see it possible or they say it's far-fetched?
Oh, no, definitely some possibilities. And we've done some screenings that are kind of like off the record for senior leaders in various agencies. We just had a screening actually at Capitol Hill at the Capitol Visitor Center, co-hosted by Senator Tammy Duckworth. And we had, former Senate Sergeant at Arms in the audience. We had current Capitol Police in the audience, some of whom were actually there on January 6th. So I think for those people who are like boots on the ground in this world, who are in the military today, or who are serving in law enforcement, there is a definite recognition that this is a problem. And
give me an example of that. Someone walking up to you and saying, oh my God, you know, I hadn't really seriously considered that. Is that the kind of...
It's more that it's less that they hadn't seriously considered it. It's more that they have, but they hadn't had an access point into the conversation. And I think what the film does.
What does that mean? Access point into the conversation.
Well, it's
that they haven't been able to discuss it openly among their peers at the Pentagon or CIA or FBI or wherever.
No, I think these topics are definitely being discussed in those agencies. I mean, the agencies are putting out reports that are basically saying, like, we know this is a problem. Action needs to be taken, but we need, some congressional leadership on a lot of this. And it's really Congress that has, failed to take up the charge and really pursue some of these reforms that groups, nonpartisan groups, law enforcement groups, agency like leaders have actually put forward. And so that to me is kind of emblematic of many of the problems that our society currently faces. Our Congress is so partisan and so polarized that we can't even agree on the facts.
Let me ask you, speaking of Congress, the House of Representatives, of course, is in the hands of the Republicans. You might say MAGA Republicans. Have you attempted to reach out to Mike Johnson and other House Republican leaders and say, watch this, this is a nonpartisan thing, have you tried to reach out to them? And if so, what kind of response have you got?
Well, we haven't really received acknowledgement or response. All members were invited to our Capitol Hill screening and their staff. So if any of them were there, I didn't hear back from them personally. We did also send the confidential report that came out of the war game to leadership on both sides of the aisle. I think that no matter what this topic within the MAGA Republican wing of the Republican Party, which is now in leadership, both from the House all the way to the top of the presidential ticket, there is a real criticism of this concept, that this idea that there is extremism in the military. And if it is there, if folks are members of the, Oath Keepers or Three Percenters or what have you, that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, Trump really leaned into recruiting these folks as his own personal militia. So that's a problem. I don't know that the film will solve it. Who we're hoping to reach with the film are people who, Elizabeth Newman, who again is a domestic terrorism and extremism expert and a lifelong Republican, she calls these people on the bubble, folks who are maybe thinking or dabbling, who are QAnon curious or dabbling on the edges, maybe starting to listen to some more fringe content, more MAGA, extreme MAGA content. And those are the folks that we really wanted to lay out. What are the stakes for our democracy, for our military, for our civil-military relations, and hope that those folks get a chance to see it.
Mm-hmm. So in short, Republicans in Congress have shown no interest in seeing War Game or have shown no interest in your project.
Nobody's picked up the phone and called me. I'll say that.
And I'll say that it's a good time for us to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the plot of War Game. And we're back. So let's get back to the plot, so to speak. I was struck at the number of deer in the headlights moments that the president, played by Montana Governor Steve Bullock, showed. I mean, he seemed totally frozen at moments of decision with people howling at him from both sides. One person in particular, who I think was the playing Secretary of the Army, saying, you've got to act, you've got to, you know, declare martial law. And without giving away the whole plot, you know, martial law becomes kind of a trap for the participants. So after they were through, after you finished filming, did people like Steve Bullock and others say, oh my God, this is too real. And if I froze in a mere documentary, what's going to happen in real time? What kind of reaction did you get from the participants after you completed the game?
Well, I'll give Governor Bullock some credit here. One thing that I think comes through in War Game, but he certainly felt that day, you know, we shot this whole thing over 6 hours. They had 6 hours to play out the scenario, and it felt very real. You know, they were fully immersed. They were fully in it. And I think one of the things that I really respect and admire about Steve's leadership is that he is a listener. You know, there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of unknowns. We intentionally were, you know, continuing to sort of turn the dial up on the stress level and the number of injects and the rapid information and disinformation that they were being flooded with in order to create a realistic scenario. And the room, the folks in the room are reflective of who you'd see in the situation room in terms of age, in terms of experience. You know, probably unlikely there'd be so much bipartisanship around the Situation Room table, but that is how we want it. We really wanted the film to, or the project to be bipartisan in nature and to have that diversity of experience and perspectives. But, you know, Steve's leadership style is to listen, to weigh, to consider, and then act.
He did a lot of weighing.
He did. You know, there's some, you know, artistic license with the edit. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I must say there's an entertaining kind of aspect to the documentary where the camera moves over to you guys who are directing the game and say, wow, let's really throw some sand in the gears here. Let's catch him by surprise here. So you guys were pumping the game full of unexpected emergencies for the political leaders and military leaders to address. Social media, unsurprisingly, plays a big role in the scenario where you have a gathering revolt of National Guard officers, and one general in particular, and the troops, right?
That's right. So we wanted to really dig into the issue of mis and disinformation on social media. We know that this is a problem in our society today. We know it's going to be a big problem around this election. And so we built inside the Situation Room, the players had access to a sort of fake Twitter feed that we created for them, that the Red Cell, our insurrectionist veterans, were flooding with information that was made up out of whole cloth or a distortion of the truth in an attempt to incite the government to take stronger action and to really get a martyr basically out of the cause. And so you see that
they
happening.
They want the government to overreact.
That's right. And I think, at one point they reference Ashley Babbitt at the Capitol, who's now become a hero of the MAGA movement. And so that was their goal, was to try to get the government to shoot at these protesters, to overreact, to spill blood in the streets. And knowing that that is, that is a recruitment tool for additional extremists. And so we see that happening. One of the things we didn't include in our scenario was foreign mis or disinformation, because we really wanted to keep the shot group tightly focused on domestic issues. But we know for a fact that China, Iran, Russia are flooding the zone, pouring gasoline on.
They're doing it now. So why wouldn't they pour it on if such a situation developed? You know, you don't deal with in the documentary, and I can see why, because it would be much too complicated to deal with. But I was wondering about military counterintelligence. You know, each service has its own intelligence arm, which is basically, you know, whose primary responsibility is to collect intelligence on the enemy, whoever that may be at the time. But they also have strong counterintelligence arms. Do you, from your own experience in the Marines and in putting this this war game together. Do you think military counterintelligence has a role to play here, or are they kind of restrained because of privacy stipulations and so on? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know, like, what the legal boundaries of their sort of scope are. I'm sure there's some arm of our intelligence agencies that are, you know, looking at folks who are active on the dark web and in these spaces, extremist spaces, and if those folks are active duty, you know, or reserve or guard.
The FBI. Absolutely. Is looking at that.
So I, you know, but I'm just a simple Marine. You know, I don't know too much about the scope of, you know, active duty military intelligence. But I do think that the agencies and the services are all very aware that this is a challenge. And, you know, I do also want to give credit where it's due. I think there are leaders within the service branches and within the DoD that are trying to implement things that address this problem, but without sort of a broader mandate from Congress, and without, you know, sort of consensus politically that this is a problem that should be addressed, it's tough for any individual leader to, you know, make systemic change.
So from your experience of starting with reading the op-ed or someone bringing it to your attention, and you're saying, oh my God, you know, here are three generals saying we got to think more seriously about a challenge of the military to the established order and revolting and trying to stage some sort of coup d'etat this coming January 6th, all the way through creating the war game and then getting showing it to Pentagon officials and members of Congress and so on, and then getting feedback all the way through to where you are today. Has your opinion changed at all on whether this is possible? What's your guess? You got a probability percentage here on if we're going to face a more sustained revolt and violence next January 6th?
Yeah, so we put this project together in over the course of 1 year. It came together very rapidly. The op-ed, I think, came out in 22. We shot the documentary. We did the war game on January 6, 2023. We actually did it in a hotel in Washington where many of the insurrectionists had stayed when they came in for January 6, 2021. So, and then it took about a year for the film to be edited. And so I didn't see the first edit until I found out that we got into Sundance at that very end of 2023. And, you know, when we created the scenario and when we did the war game, we did not know that Trump would be at the top of the ticket again for the Republican Party. At this point, he'd kind of faded from public consciousness. DeSantis was on the rise. And so we didn't know that Trump would be the head of the party again. And we certainly didn't know that the Republican Party was going to, you know, have an ideology document that they published in Project 2025 that actually calls on a future President Trump to use the Insurrection Act to do things that are a dramatic break from what Americans have come to sort of expect from their civil-military relations. And by that, I'll give two examples that are within this policy doc, prescriptive policy document in Project 2025. One is for the next president to use the Insurrection Act to deploy active duty and guard to the states and cities of political rivals. So to have National Guard policing Chicago and San Francisco and Washington, D.C., blue states, blue cities. The other is to use the active duty military to conduct mass deportations in this country. And I think both of those things are wild departures from what we have come to expect.
Hard to imagine that troops would go along with, you know, big units would go along with that kind of activity.
Right. And it's, I mean, our military forces are currently facing a recruiting challenge as it is. It's really important that we have a diverse and ready force that can deploy, you know, where the globe is not a safe place. We have a lot of conflict in the Middle East. We've got, you know, a lot of conflict happening in the South China Sea. Like, there's a lot of things that we need to have a prepared military for. And to put the active duty military into either of those positions sends a really I think, damaging signal to anyone considering joining and serving in uniform, because that's certainly not what American troops have done in the past at that scale before. So I think it's, unfortunately, it's now more relevant than it was when we put the project together.
Mm, all this kind of racist scenario of blue on blue military clashes, should this scenario come true. My God, it's really, it's very jarring. I urge everyone to watch, find a way to see War Games through streaming or going to a theater and seeing this. It's, I hate to use the cliche, a wake-up call, but it's certainly stunning and makes you think, my God, this could really happen.
I really appreciate you saying that, Jeff. And at one point in the film, we actually hear from Senator Heidi Heitkamp, who plays a senior advisor to the president. And she says, you know, is it likely? No. But is it possible that this could happen here? Absolutely. And we have to be prepared for that eventuality. War Game is a great jumping off point for conversations in our homes, in our communities. The film is available on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, and a bunch of other streaming platforms. But you can also find where it is available theatrically, or we're doing a number of community screenings at college campuses across the country, all at our website, which is wargamefilm.com.
And the message is, the bottom line is, better to be prepared than to close your eyes and ears and think it'll never happen here.
That's right. And, you know, I think it's, the film's been called the scariest movie of the year by Rolling Stone. A lot of people say, wow, this is a terrifying scenario that you've put on film here. But it's also hopeful, because what you see on screen that you don't often see is actually thoughtful, principled leaders who might have very different political backgrounds, partisan, and be on different sides of the partisan aisle, but coming together because they care deeply about our democracy. They care deeply about keeping Americans safe and ensuring that our experiment in representative democracy continues for another couple hundred years at least. And I think that's inspiring as well.
Well, let's hope that's the happy ending in real life.
Fingers crossed.
Janessa Goldbeck, thanks so much for spending some time with us at Spy Talk.
I really appreciate it, Jeff. Thanks.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Thanks much for listening. Do try to see War Game, available in many theaters and streaming on Amazon Prime and Apple Plus TV. Meanwhile, you can find lots more interesting conversations like this one in our archives, available at our home at the MSW Network or in Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, mosey on over to our Spy Talk newsletter on Substack, where my colleagues and I offer fresh reporting and analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll find your way there. This week's Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. I'm Jeff Stein. See you around.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.